Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win, exploring ideas to enhancing national competitiveness. I'd like to welcome my guest for the second half of today's show, Gail Fossler, president of the Gail Fossler Group and contributor to the recent IBM Center book, Governing to Win. Gail, welcome to the show. It's great to have you as my guest.
Good to be here.
So the classic definition, I mean, your essay notes that you can no longer define national competitiveness solely by measures of international trade and relative costs.
Right.
What trends have led to this sort of redefinition of national competitiveness?
Well, this is what you just mentioned is actually sort of my own definition. And within the economics profession, people would find that to be a bit iconoclastic. But what I think we have to simply look at the realities of American competitiveness by standard measures. And you look at unit labor costs, which is the, you know, our basic productivity versus our labor costs. And the U.S. has done better than almost any other advanced economy. In fact, you know, countries like Germany that are doing extremely well on the trade front have unit labor costs that are much higher than the U.S. So we have to ask ourselves, really, what's going on here? And the fact is that technology, labor, innovation is so mobile, and antitrust laws and regulatory laws, and there's so many things now that are common that the world economy is really a very level playing field, to our friend Tom Friedman. The world is flat. And one of the few things that is separate, and separateness is kind of the core of traditional economic trade theory, the one thing that is separate is government decision making.
Interesting. How is these trends undermine the idea of competitive advantage that we traditionally understand?
Well, we usually, you know, thought of countries as kind of walled fortresses, and within each of those walled fortresses, you had more land, or you had more resources, or you had more people, or you had some kind of unique combination of what we called competitive advantage, and you would use that. You would mix up the potion around those resources and then lob your products into another fortress, all right? And then they would have, you know, less land but more people, and they would mix their magic potion and lob something else that was cheaper back into your fortress. Well, you know, that cost competition is really now a race to the bottom. And everybody tries to play that game. Some of the higher cost countries, again, as I said, Germany, are actually some of the countries that have some of the biggest trade surpluses.
So with all the changes or the way you've described competitiveness, national competitiveness, what are some of the key questions that arise as a result of these changes that you're describing? And is there need for a new framework on how you approach the understanding of national competitiveness?
Well, I think that is the, you know, we've usually regarded government and governance, and what I might call governing frameworks, that is how we go about identifying our goals, how we discuss our goals, how we discuss what are the most efficient means of meeting our goals as a country, what are the practices that we apply in the public sector in terms of delivering public goods and social goods. We've usually regarded that as sort of part of our domestic agenda. And what I'm saying here is that this is at our core, this is our national competitiveness agenda, because it is the one thing that among all those, you know, people, innovation, capital, financial flows, it is the one thing that is unique to our fortress.
In your contribution to Governing to Win, you acknowledge that throughout the 90s. And most of the last decade, the U.S. GDP grew faster than most other industrialized countries. What has become painfully clear over the last 5 years? How has it changed?
Well, I think what we all acknowledge now is that faster growth was based in part on leverage, which we have determined was painfully determined as unsustainable. And that it really did not, if one looks at per capita income or household income, household income has been, median household income has basically been declining since 2000, with a little bit of, it had a little bit of blip during the last decade. But basically today, it's like 10% lower than it was in 2000. And so we've not been returning the growth and the income from our economic model to the average American. I think that's one of the reasons why the electorate today is as cranky as it is.
So, Gail, this new view of competitiveness is underscored in a recent Business Council survey of national competitiveness, which you talk about in your article. When leading CEOs of global corporations were asked to prioritize a list of key elements, attributes of national competitiveness, 90%, I understand from your article, agree that on four top elements. Right. Would you outline those four top elements for us?
Well, first is an educated workforce. Second is having the resources, and that is not just the physical resources, but the decision-making resources to be able to meet your goals in the international international marketplace. The third is a favorable regulatory environment. And actually, I thought it was interesting that number four was what you might call traditional cost competitiveness.
Interesting. I want to stay on that for a little while because what I want to talk about is how some of the respondents talked about the U.S. gaining its competitive edge once again. And I think that something on the order of three quarters of them, of the survey respondents, identified specific actions that can be taken as the most effective ways to restore national. Would you elaborate on those actions?
Well, most of those actions align with the problems, which is we actually ask those questions in two different sections, and then we see if indeed there is an alignment. But education is really a very top priority of the business community. And in a more recent survey where we were asking about the presidential agenda, you know, looking forward into the election year, you know, usually education and energy policy wasn't particular to this competitiveness, particular set of competitiveness questions. But I was surprised that education and energy, which is usually very specific and it ranks fairly far down the list, these two policy issues ranked just under pro-growth economic policies and general budget and tax alignment. So these issues, I mean, the business community the business community is very consistent in wanting pro-growth economic policies, wanting an educated workforce, wanting a resolution of the deficit issues. Actually, they're very singularly aligned behind tax reform. Mm-hmm. And then finally, regulatory reform. So the things the business community wants stacks up very cleanly against those things they think would make America competitive.
I just want to focus a little bit more on the U.S. itself. You've done a wonderful job laying out the idea of a new national competitiveness paradigm. And really what I want to talk about a little bit is from your perspective, at least in the piece that you've offered in Governing to Win, would you explain why the U.S. cannot cost compete its way to economic prosperity? And also, what are some of the so-called competitive liabilities facing the U.S.?
Well, to begin with your second part of your question first, the competitive liabilities are some of the ones we've already talked about. The high cost of healthcare. One of the branches of economics looks at transactions cost. What does it cost to essentially transact business in an economy versus what does it cost to transform the product and the service? So, you know, you ask about unit labor costs, about cost competitiveness and the like. Those would be transformation costs. Things like healthcare costs are transactions costs, information is a transactions cost. Tax rates are a transactions cost. So, you know, you want to reduce both of them within reason, but which do not sacrifice things like the quality of healthcare, the quality of education, and the like. And so we can, if we look at, there's always another platform out there. Take China. Mm-hmm. We are all aware, we see on television, Apple computers, huge manufacturing facilities. You could imagine that those facilities might be in Northern California. If one were to look at the technology content, the way they're organized, the ability to turn over applications within a matter of a few months. So there's no way we're going to cost compete with China because they, in that vein, because they have got all the technology, all the organizational capability, not just in the foreign investment, but in domestic enterprises, some domestic enterprises as well. So our ability to kind of pull ourselves together and make these decisions around education, around healthcare, around the innovation to reduce the barriers which have been in place for 30 years now that seem to be creating less new business development. There's a palpable decline in new job creation among small enterprises, which was always a strength in America. So those are now, I think, much more important than looking at these comparative unit labor cost measures.
How is governance the new competitiveness imperative? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.